Craig and Tungata made 3 climbs down to Lobengula's pool at the foot of the Grand Gallery, carrying the makeshift diving gear, the spare oxygen bottles, the underwater lamps that Craig had made up with the batteries and globes scavenged from the life jackets, firewood and fur blankets to warm Craig after each dive, and provisions to avoid the necessity of climbing back to the upper cavern for meals. After discussion, it was agreed that the 2 girls would take turns at remaining in the upper cavern to meet the messengers from Vuzamanzi's village and to carry down a warning to the others in the event of a Shona patrol stumbling on the entrance. Before testing the diving equipment, Craig and Tungata made a careful survey of the route down to the pool, choosing the positions on which they would fall back if they were ever forced to defend the inner recesses of the cave system against a Shona attack. Although neither of them mentioned it, they were both acutely aware that there was no final position, no ultimate escape hole from the mountain depths, and that any defence must end at the icy waters of the pool. Tungata made the only open acknowledgement of this, when in plain sight of the other 3, he took 4 7.62mm bullets for the Tukarev pistol, wrapped them in a scrap of goatskin, and wedged them in a crack in the limestone wall beside the pool. The 2 girls watched him with sickly fascination, and though Craig made a show of checking his breathing equipment, they all understood. This was the final assurance against torture and slow mutilation. 1 bullet for each of them. "Okay," Craig's voice was overloud for the silence of the gallery. "I'm going to see how efficiently this contraption's going to drown me." Tungata lifted the set, and Craig knelt and slipped his head through the yoke of the life jacket. Sally Ann and Sarah settled the bottle and canisters on his back and then strapped them in place with strips of canvas cut from the seat covers. Craig checked the knots. If the set ever failed, he must be able to jettison it in a hurry. At last he hopped into the pool, shuddered at the cold as he fitted the mask over his mouth and nose, secured the strap behind his head, and half-filled his chest bag with oxygen. He gave the 3 on the bank a thumbs-up sign and lowered himself below the surface. As he had anticipated, buoyancy was his first problem. The pull of the bag on his chest rolled him onto his back like a dead fish, and with the thrust of his 1 leg, he was unable to right himself. He paddled back to the slab and began the irksome business of experimenting with rock weights to adjust his attitude in the water. In the end, he found that the only way to do it was to hold an excessively heavy stone and let it draw him down head first. However, as soon as he released the stone, he was borne irresistibly upwards. "At least the joints are watertight," he told them when he surfaced again. "And I am getting oxygen. There's a lot of water leaking in around the edges of the mask, but I can purge that in the usual way." He demonstrated the trick of holding the mask at the top and forcing the accumulated water out of the bottom with a sharp exhalation of breath. "When are you going to go for the wall?"
"I guess I'm as ready now as I ever will be," Craig admitted reluctantly.
"You must understand that I wish to be as a father to you," Peter Fungerbearer smiled gently. "I look upon you as my children."
"I can understand this Shona chattering as little as I can the barking of baboons from the hilltops," Vuzamanzi replied courteously. And Peter Fungerbearer made a gesture of irritation as he turned to his sergeant.
"Where is that translator?" "He will be here very soon, Mumbo."
Tapping his swagger stick against his thigh, Peter Fungerbearer walked slowly down the ragged rank of villagers that his troopers had gathered in from their hoeing on the maize fields and had flushed from the huts. Apart from the old man, they were all women or children. Some of the women were as ancient as the witch doctor, with white woolly pates and wizened dugs hanging to their waists. Others were still capable of childbearing, with fat infants strapped to their backs or standing naked at their knees. Snot had dried white around the toddler's nostrils, and flies crawled unnoticed on their lips and at the corners of their eyes. And they stared up at Peter as he passed with fathomless eyes. There were still younger women with firm, full breasts and glossy skin, prepubescent girls and uncircumcised boys. Peter Fungerbearer smiled kindly at them, but they stared back at him without expression. "My Matabili puppies, we will hear you yap a little before this day is done," he promised softly, and turned at the end of the line. He walked back slowly to where the Russian waited in the shade of one of the huts.
"You will get nothing out of the old one."
Bukharin took the ebony cigarette holder from between his teeth and coughed softly, covering his mouth with his hand.
"He is dried up, beyond pain, beyond suffering. Look at his eyes. Fanatic."
"I agree. These Sangoma are capable of self-hypnosis. He will be impervious to pain." Peter Fungerbearer shot back the cuff of his battle smock and glanced impatiently at his watch.
"Where is the translator?"
It was another hour before the Matabili trusty from the rehabilitation center was hustled up the path from the valley. He fell on his knees before Peter Fungerbearer, blubbering and holding up his manacled hands.
"Get up!"
Then to the sergeant. "Remove his manacles. Bring the old man here." Vuzamanzi was led into the center of the village square.
"Tell him I am his father," Fungerbearer ordered.
"Mambo, he replies that his father was a man, not a hyena."
"Tell him that although I cherish him and all his people, I am displeased with him." "Mambo, he replies that if he has made your honor unhappy, then he is well content."
"Tell him he has lied to my men."
"Mambo, he hopes for the opportunity to do so again." "Tell him that I know he is protecting and feeding 4 enemies of the state." "Mambo, he suggests that your honor is demented. There are no hidden enemies of the state."
"Very well.
Now address all these people. Repeat that I wish to know where the traitors are hidden. Tell them that if they lead me to them, then nobody in this village will come to any harm."
The translator stood before the silent rank of women and children and made a long and passionate plea. But when he ended, they stared back at him stolidly. One of the infants began to scream petulantly, and its mother swung it under her arm and pressed her swollen nipple into its tiny mouth. There was silence again.
"Sergeant!"
Peter Fungerbearer gave terse orders, and Vuzamanzi's hands were snatched behind his back and bound at the wrists. One of the troopers fashioned a hangman's noose in a length of nylon rope and tossed the free end of the rope over one of the main supports of an elevated maize bin at the edge of the square. They stood Vuzamanzi under the maize bin and dropped the noose over his head.
"Now, tell his people that when any one of them agrees to lead us to the traitors, this punishment will end immediately."
The translator raised his voice. But he had not finished before Vuzamanzi called over him in a firm voice.
"My curse upon any of you who speak to this Shona pig. I command silence upon you no matter what it is done. He who breaks it will be visited by me from beyond the grave. I, Vuzamanzi, master of the waters, command this thing."
"Do it,"
Peter Fungerbearer ordered, and the sergeant inched in the slack in the rope. The noose closed around the old man's neck, and gradually he was forced up onto his tiptoes.
"Enough,"
Peter Fungerbearer ordered, and they secured the free end of the rope.
"Now, let them come forward and speak."
The translator moved down the rank of women, urging them and finally pleading unashamedly. But Vuzamanzi glared at his women fiercely, unable to speak, but still commanding them with all his will.
"Break one of his feet,"
ordered Peter Fungerbearer, and the sergeant faced the old man, and with a dozen blows, using the butt of his rifle like a maize stamp, he crushed Vuzamanzi's left foot. As the women heard the brittle old bones snap like kindling for the hearth, they began to wail and ululate.
"Speak,"
Peter Fungerbearer commanded. Vuzamanzi stood on one leg, his neck twisted to one side at the pull of the rope. His damaged foot began to swell like a balloon being inflated, to 3 times its natural size, the skin stretched black and shiny as an overripe fruit on the point of splitting open.
"Speak,"
Peter Fungerbearer ordered the second time, and the mourning cries of the women drowned him out.
"Break his other foot,"
he nodded to the sergeant. As the rifle butt shattered the complex of small bones in Vuzamanzi's right foot, he fell sideways against the rope, and the sergeant stepped back, grinning at the contortions of the old man as he tried frantically to relieve the pressure of the rope by taking his weight on his mutilated feet. All the women were screaming now, and the children's cries swelled the anguished chorus. One of the old women, the senior wife, broke the line and ran forward with both thin arms outstretched towards her husband of 50 years. "Leave her," Peter Fungerbearer ordered the guards, who would have restrained her. They stepped aside. The frail old woman reached her husband and tried to lift him, crying out her love and her compassion. But she did not have the strength even for Wuzumanzi's emaciated body. She succeeded only in relieving the pressure on his larynx enough to prolong the agonies of his strangulation. The old man's mouth was open, hunting for air, and white froth coated his lips. He was making a harsh cawing sound, and the old wife's antics were ludicrous.
"Listen to the Matabili rooster crow and his ancient hen cackle," Peter Fungerbearer smiled, and the troopers guffawed delightedly.
It took a long, long time, but when at last Wuzumanzi hung still and silent, with his face twisted up to the sky, his wife sank to the earth at his feet and rocked her body rhythmically as she began the keen of mourning. Peter Fungerbearer walked back to the Russian, and Bukharin lit another cigarette and murmured, "Crude and ineffective." "There was never any chance with the old fool. We had to get him out of the way and set the mood." Peter dabbed at his chin and forehead with the tail of his scarf. "It was effective, General. Just look at the faces of the women." He tucked the scarf back into the neck of his smock and strolled back to the women. "Ask them where the enemies of the state are hidden." But as the translator began to speak, the old woman sprang to her feet and rushed back to face them. "You saw your lord die without speaking," she screeched. "You had his command. You know that he will return." Peter Fungerbearer altered the grip on his swagger stick and with little apparent effort drove the point of it up under the old woman's ribs. She screamed and collapsed. Her spleen, enlarged by endemic malarial infection, had ruptured at the blow. "Get rid of her," Peter ordered, and one of the troopers seized her ankles and dragged her away behind the huts. "Ask them where the enemies of the state are hidden." Peter walked slowly along the rank, looking into their faces, evaluating the degree of terror that he saw in each pair of black Matabili eyes. He took his time over the selection, coming back at last to the youngest mother, barely more than a child herself, her infant strapped upon her back with a strip of patterned blue cloth. He stood in front of her and stared her down. Then, when he judged the moment, he reached out and took her wrist. He led her gently to the centre of the open square, where the remains of the watchfire still burned. He kicked the smouldering ends of the logs together and, still holding the girl, waited until they burst into flame again. Then he twisted the girl's arm, forcing her to her knees. Slowly, silence fell over the other women, and they watched with deadly fascination. Peter Fungerbearer loosened the blue cloth and lifted the infant off the girl's back. It was a boy, a chubby infant, with skin the colour of wild honey. His little pot belly was gorged with his mother's milk, and there were creases of fat like bracelets at his wrists and ankles. Peter tossed him up lightly, and as he fell, seized one ankle. The child shrieked with shocked outrage, dangling upside down from Peter's fist. "Where are the enemies of the state hidden?" The child's face was swelling and darkening with blood. "She says she does not know." Peter Fungerbearer lifted the child high above the flames. "Where are the enemies of the state?" Each time he repeated the question, he lowered the infant a few inches. "She says she does not know." Suddenly, Peter lowered the little wriggling body into the very heart of the flames, and the child squealed with a totally new sound. Peter lifted it clear of the flames after a second and dangled in front of the mother's face. The flames had frizzled away the child's eyelashes and the tight little crisp curls from its scalp. "Tell her that I will roast this little piglet slowly, and then I will force her to eat it." The girl tried to snatch her child back, but he kept it just beyond her reach. The girl started screaming a single phrase, repeating it over and over again. And the other women sighed and covered their faces. "She says she will lead you to them." Peter Fungerbearer dropped the infant into her arms and strolled back to the Russian. Colonel Bukharin inclined his head slightly in grudging admiration.